My name is Darwin Schweitzer. I had the opportunity to be here last year, so thank you for the opportunity to be back again. Last year, I got a chance to introduce the Cortana Intelligence Solutions, or what it's now known as Cortana Intelligence Solutions, when it was a brand new product in Taipei. This event was actually sort of the first spike of usage that we had. So hopefully some of you will get a chance to try the product now that it's public preview, but we'll talk more about that after the break. So I put my email up there as well as my GitHub, my Twitter, and also there's a Cortana Intelligence group on LinkedIn as well. So if any of this stuff is interesting today and you want to go look at some code, or if you want to communicate with me or join the group on LinkedIn, please do. And I'll have this slide up again. So the amazing thing about this space, big data and analytics, is I've been in the data space since 1993. I came out of graduate school and was fortunate enough to fall on top of this big data warehousing and decision support product that was on a couple of IBM products at the time. And so I've spent, almost 25 years now in this space. The interesting thing is I think for individuals that are looking at this as a career now or already in that career, I think it's better now than it has been in the last two decades. And so the opportunity is fantastic for you as an individual that's interested in data and wanting to work in this field. And it's also probably the most tremendous opportunity for companies as well. The other thing I thought was kind of interesting was, I don't know how many of you are horse racing fans, I don't watch that often, but the horse that won the Preakness, which is the middle of the Triple Crown, the name of that horse was Cloud Computing. So you know that when cloud computing is official, when they start to name racehorses after it, and they win major races like the Preakness. I also put up some of these hashtags up there. If you're interested, and if you happen to be a Twitter user, if you want to send in the session after the break, if you send some tweets to #DevDaysAsia2017 or any of these other, we will be able to look at your tweets live using time series insights, and basically because we're ingesting the tweets using a Python running and ingesting into Event Hub, and then we'll talk more about that a little bit later. But I wanted to put this up. So the thing that's really made a lot of this stuff possible are, again, the big data movement, cloud computing, and then really advanced analytics and sort of the data world and the traditional BI data warehousing world kind of smashing into each other. And as far as the things that are driving change, if you look at sort of the traditional side, traditionally when I started data warehousing back in the 90s, it was DB2 on the mainframe, but it was relational databases that were being used. The data was normalized. The schema was defined, or maybe it was denormalized if it was a star schema. And now what we're kind of moving to in the big data era is looking at data that is not schema defined. So you're bringing in maybe massive amounts of logs from servers or tweets from Twitter or device information from devices in the Internet of Things, and you really don't want to put a tight schema over top of that. You actually want to be able to look at it in different ways. And so the big data technologies like Hadoop, like Azure Data Lake, give you a lot of capabilities to do that. Also on the cost side of it, especially back in the mainframe days or in your massively parallel processing databases like Teradata, Netezza, Microsoft had its parallel data warehouse server, which became its APS appliance. A lot of times, those technologies were quite expensive. You had to buy specialized hardware, and there was licensing and hardware costs. A lot of the things in the big data world, especially with the cloud, you're using commodity hardware and massive clusters of commodity hardware as opposed to more expensive hardware. The other piece, too, is kind of on the cultural side of things. When I started, a lot of times people were happy if they wanted to request a report. They would, write out what they wanted, and somebody would go off and do the report and provide it to them, some days or later. One of the things which is interesting and kind of in the data science and advanced analytics space is people want to experiment a lot more with data. They want to get data earlier in the cycle. They want to get it as it's coming off the logs. They don't want to wait for someone to do a lot of processing, so they may use tools to get that data much earlier. And so there's much more sort of a culture of experimentation. I always think of it, especially in data warehousing, there was always one version of the truth was something that drove a lot of that. And I never believed that there was one version of the truth. And I think now it's more experimental. You're experimenting on records. You maybe never have all the records, but it's going to be changing kind of constantly, but you're doing experimentation with it. So it's not sort of financials where you have to balance the books. You still need, you know, very precise numbers there, but it is a much more experimental world. So the product that I represent is something called Cortana Intelligence Solutions, and this sort of gives you an idea of sort of the breadth of what Cortana Intelligence Solutions is, or what Cortana Intelligence is. It's really just sort of a nice umbrella over top of a number of different technologies that Microsoft has in the cloud. Over here on the, I just turned that off. I was trying to figure out how to do the laser pointer, but maybe there isn't one. But over on the far left, information management, there's tools like Data Factory, which is more of an integration batch or micro-batch style integration, like an ETL tool of the past. Event hubs. Event hubs can be used for ingesting streaming real-time data from a service like Twitter or from devices, although you may use an IoT hub as well if you're doing Internet of Things. And then you have big data stores. So you have the Azure Data Lake store. Azure Blob Storage could kind of fall into this as well because you can use Blob Storage under HD Insight. And then also SQL Data Warehouse. So Azure SQL Data Warehouse is a massively parallel processing data warehouse that runs in the cloud. So as opposed to buying an appliance that you would have to put on-prem, you actually use this technology up in the cloud. To the right of that, you have sort of machine learning and analytics. We're going to look a little bit at Azure Machine Learning today. I know Seth is here talking a lot about R and a lot of our other advanced analytics technologies, but we'll look a little bit at machine learning, especially in the session when we talk about the streaming Twitter data that we look at with time series insights. And then you have Data Lake Analytics and Hadoop and Spark. And then stream analytics used as a tool is on streaming data to be able to do, you know, complex event processing as data comes through from an event source. You can actually apply machine learning algorithms and query that data and then push it into another technology. And then over on the far right, the things that most of your users are going to want to do with the data is they're going to want to consume the data in something like Power BI, which we'll talk about later. Time series insights, which is more for operational reporting. If someone's maybe, you know, in a utility looking at the power grid, or in manufacturing and looking at an assembly line and being able to see data in more real time and analyze that. And then also a lot of the things that Ted talked about earlier, you know, the bot framework, cognitive services APIs, those type of things are all things that users would use to consume some of these things that may be integrated with the things on the left. So introducing Microsoft Big Data, so these are really two pieces. If you think of the data lake, I put the data lake in the middle. Marketing always likes to put the data lake in a different place, but the data lake store here is in the middle because the data lake store is this exabyte level data storage. You can drop like petabyte files onto this, and so it's kind of pretty incredible. And it can be used by Data Lake Analytics, which we'll talk about later, and it can also be used by HD Insight, which is our Hadoop service, our PaaS service for Hadoop that runs on Azure. And then HD Insight can also run using Microsoft Blob Storage as well. And then one of the things which isn't on this diagram is Azure SQL Data Warehouse, and we'll talk about it at the end of the presentation as well. So a few more details on HD Insight, and then we're going to sort of look at a demo of each of these things briefly as well, and we'll demo them more throughout the day. So HD Insight is of course Hadoop, and Hadoop is this, you know, open source sensation in the big data space, which has really changed a lot of things. If you look at traditional integration, which used to happen in tools like integration services on SQL Server or Informatica or DataStage from IBM, those type of examples, a lot of times you would take the data from a source, put it through an ETL engine, and then put it into a relational database. And so the data was actually moving. And the problem with that model is if you have truly big data that's you know, a huge amount of data, you don't really want to take it and move it in that fashion, just to process the data. So what Hadoop allows you to do is leave the data where it lies and then basically take the processing to the data. And the data is kind of distributed across a number of machines, and you can take sort of, you know, SQL-like things like Hive or Pig, which is a processing language in Hadoop, or Spark. And then you can also use programming logic as well. So in the case of Hadoop, you could use Java and write Java user-defined functions. And so it's really this conglomeration of what data management people do so well with traditional languages like SQL, and what programmers do so well with programming languages like Java and C# and R and Python. So the one thing is, why Hadoop in the cloud? So one of the things which is really interesting to me, and I teach a class at the University of Washington in the summer, this will be the fourth or fifth year I have, and it's based on cloud analytics. And if I compare when I started teaching in 2009, it was very difficult. Students, I had to, you know, like create files for virtual machines, and they had to zip them and unzip them and then install them. It was very difficult to do. And then with the cloud movement for running virtual machines in the cloud, that meant students could actually run virtual machines in the cloud. And the beauty of the big data technology is whether you're learning as a student or learning as an employee or, you know, deploying something in production or in test at a company, the cloud makes this much, much easier. You can start faster, you can stop faster, you can scale when you need to scale. And so those are really the things, is that you don't have to go through the process of getting hardware and racking and stacking and getting in your data center, getting somebody to approve it and those type of things. It's again, you have to make approval still, but it's a lot easier. Also, unlimited scale. So you can start with a cluster of 4 servers and then move it to 40 servers and then 100 servers and then 400 servers maybe at the end of the year, because you got to crunch a bunch of numbers, whatever you need to do. And also you pay for what you need. So if you kick off a Hadoop cluster and you run it while you're doing your processing, and then you maybe take it from 50 down to 5 servers because there's no processing going on, and then you flex it back up. So you have that elastic aspect of the cloud. And also you can deploy it in minutes. So it doesn't, I mean, it's much easier to build it up and tear it down in that scenario. So no hardware costs, you know, we talked about this. I remember in the IT areas I've worked in, I used to manage a team we had a large infrastructure of business object servers, and we had to go fight with the department to get more servers all the time. And so it was very difficult for us to expand as we needed to. That's much easier to do in this space. Unlimited scale, we talked about that. So being able to spin up the number of Hadoop nodes that you need on demand, you can size and scale it as you need, either programmatically or through the portal. Pay as you go, so Hadoop is billed by usage. And when we talk a little bit later about Azure Data Lake, one of the things which is different, with Hadoop, you have to pay to keep a cluster running. With Azure Data Lake, you pay for jobs that you run. And so you store the data for very cheap, but when you need to run a job, you pay on a job basis, but you don't have to start your cluster. Whereas on Hadoop, you have to actually pay for the cluster, and so there's some advantages and disadvantages depending on how you view those. And then again, deploy in minutes. And then a lot of the things too is that the expertise it takes to basically keep create a Hadoop cluster and keep a Hadoop cluster running is made a little bit easier by the cloud. And yet there's still, it really gives your data engineers and your data scientists the ability to start working on the problems that they want and some of the code, as opposed to some of the infrastructure basics of this. Also, high availability is designed on the cloud ground up, and so Microsoft, since day one with HD Insight, has always made the head node on Hadoop redundant, so that if you lost the head node, that you would be able to have high availability and fail over pretty gracefully. And you can see the other things here too. It includes ZooKeeper, as well as the secondary head node, which I talked about. Also, there's sort of this role-based security. So if many of you have heard of Apache Ranger, you can actually do, you know, ACL level security on files, which early on in Hadoop, that was one of the issues is that you put stuff on the storage and then it, you know, it wasn't super secure, although there wasn't, you know, the entire company wasn't accessing the Hadoop cluster. Maybe they were accessing some downstream thing like a database or an analysis services cube or something like that. But security's come a long way on Hadoop as well, regardless of who you're looking at. Also, HD Insight runs almost, I think, in every data center. It's actually the probably drives some of the most consumption of Azure of any service on Azure, and it's actually a Linux first-party service. And so the majority of Hadoop runs on Linux. It's essentially Hortonworks, HDP running on Linux. There's a Windows flavor as well, but probably majority of folks are probably using Linux. And as we talk a little bit about some of the partners in the space, that is some of the times the reason, because the partner has stuff that runs on Linux servers. And again, Microsoft now is on Azure, is just as happy to fire up a Red Hat or an Ubuntu server as they are a Windows server. Want to talk a little bit about the roles. So this is my data snowman. It's not exactly wintertime now, and you guys have warmer temperatures. I would melt the snowman, but the whole idea here is that the top of the snowman is the business user. And so when I think of data science, this is what I think of as the entire data science piece, is you need business acumen. You have business users that have real business problems, just not data for data's sake. You then kind of have the data analyst, which is your typical person that's done analysis of data using tools like Tableau and Power BI and Excel and things like that. And then the data scientist in the middle, and you could argue that's the advanced analytics machine learning professional, and then the data engineer. Now, ideally, if you could get this in one person, that's kind of a great scenario, but truly sometimes it's more teams of people. And as we break this up, when we look at these roles, if you look at total cost of ownership, this is something that business people are concerned about, right? So from the business perspective, they want to get started fast. They want to be low friction, and they don't want the IT department to get in the way a lot of the times. And so there's a lot of things here in sort of cloud-provided HD Insight, which helps with that. Also, it's easy for business analysts to interact with reports over big data. So there's essentially Spark integration, there's ODBC drivers for tools like Power BI, as well as third-party BI tools like Tableau and SAP Business Objects and Qlik. And so these are the things that sort of your business person and your data analysts are interested in. From the aspect of the data science side, one of the things is you can actually run R Server and Spark on top of HD Insight as well. And so you can also, R Server also runs on Teradata, R Server also runs on, Cloudera or Hortonworks on-premises as well, if you have sort of an on-premises side. But again, R combined with Hadoop gives your data scientists some pretty amazing scenarios for, manipulating larger data sets than, of course, you could using R on the memory on a single machine. The other piece too is this scenario with notebooks. If you guys are familiar with Jupyter notebooks, Jupyter stands for Julia, Python, and R. And so basically a notebook is an environment that you can write code, whether it be Python code or R code or Julia code. And then you can run that code and you can see the visualization, or you can see the grid of data, and then you can go write some more code. And so you can kind of do the analysis in a notebook, and I think Seth probably will show some of this off in some of his sessions. But it's a tremendous place for a data scientist or a data analyst to work when they maybe prefer this to a BI tool, because there's some things that make sense to use this for. And so notebooks are available. There's Jupyter and Zeppelin notebooks. With Spark, you can also write Scala code as well. So Scala is a functional language written on top of Java, and that may be something you want to use as if you're using potentially Spark running on Hadoop to process data. All right. Also, inside of Visual Studio, there's some pretty nice debugging environments. And so if you write Hive code as an example inside of Visual Studio, you can actually get some sort of visualizations of how that code's running. You can you can basically use Visual Studio, Eclipse, IntelliJ, and then you can see it's integrated with Hive, Pig, Storm, and Spark. And then the nice thing about being in something like Visual Studio is you've got IntelliSense and sort of, you know, code complete and tab code complete and things like that. So let's last thing I mentioned, you know, easy for administrators to spin up. And so the people that are typically going to take care of those servers if they're on-prem, if they're going to be taking care of the servers for you a little bit up on Azure as well, it's a little bit easier job for them. So let's go look a little bit at a demo of some of the Hadoop stuff. And well, for those of you, hopefully you'll be staying for the Cortana Intelligence Solutions session, and we'll look more at how this gets created. This actually gets created in about 15, actually this one's a little bit longer. This one takes about 30 minutes to run because it has to create the Hadoop cluster. But all of this stuff gets created. You just go in and give it a deployment, a name, pick your Azure subscription and a location, hit deploy, and it deploys. In this case, we're looking at HD Insight, which has got the little elephant icon in here. When we click on this, you'll see the dashboard page. So I'm going to go into the cluster dashboard. And if I log on here and remember my password, you get taken into the HD Insight query cluster, and here you have essentially a Hive editor where you can write Hive code. You've got a job history, so you can look at the job history. You have a file browser, so you can go in and actually look at the files. So if we wanted to look at the data, you can basically look through, like click on the right thing, and work through and actually see some of the files. And I think in the end, these are actually some GZ zip files that are actually sitting in here. So this gives you the ability, and again, depending if you deploy a Hadoop cluster, which is going to give you Hive, or a Spark cluster, which is going to give you Zeppelin and Jupyter Notebooks to use Scala and Python on, all of those things are available to use inside of the console. Okay, so we're going to come back, and based on time here, we're going to go and do a few slides on Data Lake and then come right back to the next demo. And then the nice thing is I have two sessions in a row, so we can kind of flex a little bit between that and the Power BI. The other nice thing on this is, you know, Forrester Research, so there's Forrester and Gartner, some of the analysts that look at this space. Microsoft is very high up, and you can see in the top corner, even ahead of Amazon Web Services. Amazon Web Services has a Hadoop service called Elastic MapReduce, which is mature and has been around for a while. It's a good Hadoop service. Microsoft is probably up higher because of sort of their overall vision on Hadoop plus Azure Data Lake and some of the other investments that we're making. But you know, super happy being where Forrester has put us in this space. I talked a little bit about, you know, would you run this on Linux? Would you run it on Windows? Here's some of the ISV integration. So Data Mirror is an example, can help you do data processing or kind of do data wrangling as a term on top of things on Hadoop at scale. And some of these cast and stream sets or some other ISVs that actually provide services that sit on top of HD Insight running. Running on Azure. So now let's look a little bit at Data Lake. So we're going to look at, I mentioned Data Lake Store can be used for HD Insight, or it can also be used for Data Lake Analytics. So one of the things that was interesting here is there's sort of no limits to the data. So and one of the things with storage, as I mentioned, I don't know what the most recent scenario is, but they've laid down at least files at least a petabyte in size, which take a long time to delete. But it's kind of, you know, if you have a lot of data, and of course a blob storage handles, you know, terabytes of scale, but Azure Data Lake Store gets you into the exabyte level. So, and in this world where, you basically keep most of your data. It used to be when I started data warehousing, there was like a rolling 18-month window because that's all they wanted to keep in the mainframe because it was expensive and the more data that was in there, the more difficult it was to query. It's a different world now. You could keep everything and then process what you want and maybe, you know, because you may want to keep 10 years of data or 15 years of data. With things like Azure Data Lake Store, that is not a problem. Also on the analytics side of this, now this Data Lake was developed on an internal product inside of Microsoft that was used in Bing, and Azure Data Lake, both store and analytics, is sort of the, you know, the outward representation of that. And when we look at this, what I've always liked about this product, and I mentioned it's job-based, which has some advantages and disadvantages depending on how you look at it, but the being able to run what's called USQL, it used to be called Scope. USQL is kind of a combination of SQL, like Transact SQL, and C#, whereas Hive is more of a, you know, a combination of Java and SQL. But we'll look at this in the demo here next. And I mentioned this petabyte-sized files, and files of all different types as well. That is also something about the data lake and about Hadoop, which is different than the data warehouse. The data warehouse was always tabular, relational model data. In the big data era, you may want to put photos and images and video and text and you know, semi-structured text and unstructured text. There's all kinds of scenarios that you can use this technology for. All right, let's look a little bit at a demo here, because we're coming back to this one. So this is actually Azure Data Lake. Azure Data Lake's pretty easy to set up. You have to get data into Azure Data Lake Store. There's something called ADL Copy, which you can actually, from the command line, move files up. And there's also a Data Explorer. So if we click on Data Explorer, you can actually upload data through the browser as well. So we've got data here. I've got some data on that I pulled from Super Bowl 50, which I can't remember if that's the last Super Bowl or the one before that, and it's a smaller representative file. And when you go back to, let's see, if we go back to Data Lake and we go into Azure Data Lake Analytics, what I want to look in here is I want to look at my jobs. I'm in store again. I clicked on the right one, so I'm going to click on Analytics. And then I have View All Jobs. And I ran some jobs here earlier this morning. And so what we're going to do is we're going to open this one up, and I'm going to duplicate the script real quick. And you can see here, if we look at this, essentially it's, you know, SQL-like syntax. You're extracting these particular fields from this tab-separated format. You're then taking that data and, you know, basically doing some roll-ups by language, counts of tweets by language, counts of tweets by user location, and counts of tweets by time zone, and producing additional files. So if I submit this job, just to kind of show you, this is, and you can do this through Visual Studio as well. So there's a Visual Studio plugin that you can use to do this same type of thing, but it's also nice to be able to do this in a browser. You can write your code and execute it from here. And in a second, you're going to see a diagram pop up, which kind of gives you a representation of what it's going to do with it. And this one takes probably about a minute or so to run. So we'll just let it get warmed up here. And once that preparing turns green, then it moves pretty good along from there. So this is, this sort of capability is not available in Hadoop through the browser, through HD Insight, but something similar is available through Visual Studio on the Hadoop side as well. But this is, again, technology that's been in this, in the Cosmos product, and not the Cosmos DB, which is the formerly known as DocumentDB, more so the technology, which is now known as Azure Data Lake. So you can see here now it's running, and then it's going to turn color-coded, and it'll kind of go red if there's issues, or it'll turn green and kind of move down from there. The nice thing about this is during the U.S. election, the three debates leading up to the election, I captured, I think, at one point, or 111 million tweets over the three different debates. And then I actually processed all this data using this technology, and I took the every word in the tweets and I exploded all the words and turned it into a word cloud. But basically I counted the words and basically exploded all the, so 140 characters, you know, times 111 million, and then essentially created that into a data set that I could actually do some analysis on, which would have been a much harder to do if you leave it in its tweet format. All right, so that's some of the technology that's available in Data Lake. So if you have a chance to play with it, I definitely recommend it. Let's go here. We'll wrap up with this, and we'll just go to current slide. All right, so I mentioned that it's you're paying for jobs, and so there's no need to create a cluster because the service is there waiting for you to run your jobs, which has some advantages. You can kind of scale up and say, I want to use, you know, 5 units or I want to use 20 units, and probably you pay for the amount of horsepower you have, but you can kind of determine what type of resources you want to give to this job depending on, you know, how important it is and that type of thing. And then I talked a little bit about USQL. So USQL basically unifies, as I mentioned, Transact SQL and C# together, and there's an example here. So you can see the top of it kind of looks SQL-like, and then actually there isn't any example of C# in here, but you can essentially do things in C# like essentially loop through and maybe loop through a tweet and look for a particular word. You could do that with C# code, where that would be much more difficult to do with a SQL language, as an example. All right, last thing in this session to talk about is Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So we'll kind of blow this slide out so you can see all of it, since we're kind of ending this one, and we'll just kind of roll right into Power BI right after this. So let me just take 2 minutes to wrap up the big data session. So look at, you know, introducing SQL or Azure SQL Data Warehouse. One of the nice things about this is it's cloud-based MPP, so massively parallel processing database. Also means that you have the ability to scale. It's elastic. You can actually pause the database, which it's harder to do with an appliance type of database. So you can say, nobody's using the database, let's pause it, and then you can restart it. There's a decoupling between the storage and the compute, similar to the way that Hadoop and Data Lake do it as well. It has, it's a fully managed platform as a service. You can see it in the browser. We won't look at it now, but you can look at it in a browser. You can open up the SQL tools that you're used to using, Management Studio, Visual Studio, to be able to interact with it. You can also, one of the things which is also kind of nice is this thing called Polybase. And so Polybase is kind of something where you could leave the data, say, on storage. So you could use Hadoop to process the data, and maybe you take tweets as an example and you process it similar, whether I was using Azure Data Lake Analytics or Hadoop, process the data, and then I could take Polybase, point to that data source as an external table, and then write Transact SQL over top of it. So I can basically write a SQL statement, but when the query runs, it actually runs on the Hadoop cluster, or it runs on the Data Lake. And then I could, if I want to move the data to SQL Server, I can move the data to SQL Server. And Polybase is available on Azure SQL Data Warehouse in the cloud, and it's also available on SQL 2016 as well. So if you had SQL Server 2016 on-prem, you could use it with your on-premise Hadoop clusters as well. So Polybase is pretty interesting to look at as well. And so basically you write a T-SQL query, and then you get the data back, and basically Hadoop goes and does the work for you. I've got a whole appendix of some additional details. I think there's another maybe 15, 20 slides that you guys have. I think we'll get the slides and be able to see them at the end, and so that'll give you some more details. So let's now flip over to Power BI, and we'll start right in with that.